sarvana ragana pranatam sajivan sadvaitam sarvadukam parijana
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Is that the correct verse in the songbook?
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, Text 19, in Soho on June 23, 2010. Tadaham Matayor Madhya.
Tadaham Matayor Madhya.
Varunya Srimadandayo.
Varunya Srimadandayo.
Tamamadam Harishyami.
Shrenayor
Ajitatmano.
Shrenayor Ajitatmano.
Taraham Matayor Madhya.
Taraham Matayor Madhya.
Varunya Srimadandayo.
Varunya Srimadandayo.
Tamomadam Harishyami.
Tamomadam Harishyami.
Shrenayor Ajitatmano.
Shrenayor Ajitatmano.
Particularly craziness from intoxication. Here we go. Tat.
Therefore.
Aham.
I.
Matayoho.
Matayoho.
Of these two drunken persons.
Madhya.
By drinking liquor.
Varunya.
Named Varuni.
Shri Mada Anhayo.
Who are blinded by celestial opulence. Tamaha Madam. This false prestige due to the mode of ignorance. Harishyami.
I shall take away.
Shreinayoho.
Because they become so attached to him.
Ajita Atmano.
Being unable to control the senses.
To hear Mateyoho.
The two people who are mad.
And Madandayoho means liquor.
Or mad with the opulence of the heavenly planet. So Mata Madanva, the people who are mad by drinking liquor, who are mad with Sri, with the heavenly opulences, Tamo Madam, who are mad in ignorance.
Translation. Therefore, since these two persons, drunk with a liquor named Varuni or Matvi, and unable to control their senses, have been blinded by the pride of celestial opulence and have become attached to women, I shall relieve them of their false prestige. So they have two kinds of madness. What are their two kinds of madness? Or three, perhaps. What are the different kinds of madnesses that Nalakubera and Manigriva have?
From drinking liquor.
From drinking liquor?
And women.
From women? And? Shri. Opulence. So people also become, people certainly become mad from intoxication. I think something like 80% of crimes are committed by people who are intoxicated. Intoxication is one of the main causes for violence, for crime, for general madness. And opulence also maddens one. How does opulence madden one? Become very proud. You think, oh, I have a lot of wealth, I have a lot of prestige, I have a lot of fame, I can do whatever I want. I can say anything, I can do anything, and nobody can touch me because I'm so opulent. And what about attraction to the opposite sex? How does that madden people? Yeah. How does attraction here to women, how does attraction to the opposite sex make people mad?
Because you forget the goal of life is self-realization.
You forget the goal of life is self-realization. How else? Aren't there lots of crimes committed when people are attached to the opposite sex? I don't know what percentage, but it's a high one. The number of crimes that are committed out of extreme attachment to sex. They call them crimes of passion. You become crazy. They lose their sense from intoxicants, alcohol, drugs, from great opulence, and from intense sexual attraction. So these Nalakuvera Mani Griva had all three kinds of madness. They were very opulent, they were the sons of a rich man, they were very attracted to the heavenly damsels, and they were drunk. So Harishyami, Hari means?
Take away.
Ami is the ending for I. I will take away all these things that are making them crazy. So the question had been asked earlier on in the chapter by Maharaj Purkhi. Text 1. It said, Yena va devarshes tamaha. Yena, by which, va, either, devarshes tamaha. How did Narada fall into ignorance? How did Narada Muni, the great sage, fall into such ignorance that he's cursing people? Because generally, if you curse somebody, it's because you're an ignorant. So in this verse, this question is answered. Purport. When a sadhu chastises or punishes someone, he does not do so for revenge. It could have been like that. Oh, these people are disrespecting me. Let me curse them. This was Daksha's mood. When Daksha came into the arena and Lord Shiva didn't acknowledge him, oh, let me curse him. Let me hurt him in some way. So this is general materialistic mood. If someone doesn't show me respect, which is what happened. These two devas didn't show any respect to Narada. They didn't even dress themselves. If you come upon people who are naked and having sex naked, you expect that they're going to be ashamed. They're going to cover themselves and show you some respect. So they didn't. So you could think that because they weren't respecting Narada, okay, no, I curse you, become trees. You disrespected me. But no. Maharaj Pariksit had inquired why Narada Muni was subject to such a spirit of revenge, tamaha. But this was not tamaha. For Narada Muni, in full knowledge of what was good, what was for the good of the two brothers, wisely thought of how to cure them. Vaishnavas are good physicians. They know how to protect the person from material disease. Thus, they are never in tamaga. Sagunan samatikjay tam brahma bhuyaya kalpite. Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Vaishnavas are always situated on the transcendental platform, the Brahman platform. They cannot be subject to mistakes or the influence of the modes of material nature. Whatever they do, after full consideration. So generally, when you're in the mode of ignorance, in the mood of revenge, do you take full consideration? And you just act. Whatever they do after full consideration is meant just to lead everyone back home, back to God. Tadaham matayo madhya varanya shri madhandayo tamo madam harishyami shrenayar ajitatamanaho. Therefore, since these two persons, drunk with a liquor named Varuni or Madhvi, and unable to control their senses, have been blinded by the pride of celestial opulence and have become attached to women, I shall relieve them of their false prestige. So we have two sides here. One is cursing and the other is being cursed. Or going into some difficulty. So, of course, Nalakuvari and Manigriva are going to be cursed to become
trees.
And trees with demigod consciousness. And demigod consciousness is a much higher level of awareness than human consciousness. But like there's a plant in this room, if we were to get the body of a plant but with human consciousness, that would be a horrible suffering condition. Plants, as said in the third canto, are just barely aware of sensations of pain. Their consciousness is very, very limited. Just like, you know, if you're going to have an operation, they limit your consciousness. You don't want to have surgical operation when you're awake. So you wouldn't want to be a tree and be awake. It's a horrible condition. So many times, even in this life, I mean, we may not be suffering as much as a tree. You just have to stand there. You know, everybody else can go about their business. You just have to stay there. Could you imagine that? Everybody goes for breakfast and you just have to stand in the corner. And you want to say something. We had in North Carolina, there was a cat who used to try to participate in the morning program. He'd sit outside the window for Mangalarti, and he'd sit outside the window again for a Bhagavatam class. And when they'd say any questions, he'd go, meow, meow. But he couldn't really participate. Jananda Maharaj just compiled a book of animals that tried to participate in Krishna consciousness. But the cat couldn't, what to speak of the plants and the trees. How can they participate? It's kind of like being a ghost. So you're there, but you can't be part of anything. Of course, these plants, again, they're practically sleeping. But if we were in a plant body, how horrible it would be. Everyone else gets to eat nice food. We just get to have water and dirt. And in our life, we may not be suffering that much, but certainly we've had times in our life where we're horrible suffering. And we may also think, you know, why is Krishna doing this to me? Like Maharaj Pariksit was asking, why is Narada such a great Vaishnava? Why is he doing this? Why is he putting someone in suffering? You might think, why is Krishna making me suffer? Doesn't he love me? And a devotee said this to me the other day, you know, I'm suffering so much. I said, but Krishna loves you. He said, I don't believe it. If he loves me, why is he doing this to me? So that's one side of this. And then the other side is, so that's from the point of view of Nalakuvari and Manigriva. Or someone seeing that from the outside, the Maharaj Pariksit saying, why was Narada in such ignorance that he was retaliating like this? And then there's from the point of view of Narada. So just like when we're suffering, we might not see the good behind it. So when someone disrespects us, as these demigods disrespected Narada, or somebody hurts us in some way, we may become in the mode of ignorance. We may get this spirit of revenge and think, okay, how can I hurt this person? So first we'll look at for ourselves in the position of suffering. So here Prabhupada's making the point that the Vaishnavas are good physicians. They're always thinking of how to help somebody. So if the Vaishnavas are like that, what to speak of Vishnu, whom the Vaishnavas worship. Now, even in this world,
we don't always appreciate the actions of a doctor, especially when we were children. When we were children and our parents took us and we got some injection, we probably didn't like the doctor. And the doctor gave us some foul-smelling medicine. And I mean, just recently, my granddaughter had an infection in her tooth. She had to get the tooth removed. And the doctor said, "You're going to have to take antibiotics." And we got her this antibacterial mouthwash. And it wasn't really that bad. But she didn't want to take it. You know, my son had to say, "No, I'm sorry, you have to do this," and stand by her and make her do it. And she didn't appreciate it. And she was saying over and over again, "Why are you making me do this if you love me? Why are you making me take some bitter-tasting medicine?" And my son said, "Actually, the medicine isn't bad. The buggies in your mouth are bad. The medicine is good for you." Of course, as a child, she couldn't understand it. You know, we tried to explain, we tried to reason. It was useless. You know, for 1 hour, we tried to explain and get her willing cooperation. We never got it. So Krishna tries to explain to us over and over again. You know, you become mad. Karana guna sangasa. You become a muda. Ahankara vimudatma. Gartyamitana. You become a crazy person. You need to be cured. And of course, all of us here sitting in this room, we've come and said we want to be cured. But we've come to the hospital, we've come to the doctor, and we've said, "Please cure me." And then the doctor says, "Okay, take this medicine." We're like, "No! Why do you hate me? If you love me, why would you be doing this to me?" Poor doctor. How Krishna's feeling when we're saying, you know, "Please take me back to Godhead, please purify me of all my anarthas." He says, "Okay, let's deal with this one." We're like, "No, not that one." There's actually one devotee in London about a year ago who contacted me and said, "You know, everything's dry now in Krishna consciousness." I said, "Well, why don't you talk to Krishna about getting rid of whatever offenses or anarthas you have?" And he said, "No, I've been telling Krishna to go easy on me." What to say? If you go to the doctor and say, "Well, I don't really want to be cured of the cancer, not just give me something that's really mild." He said, "Well, it might not work." "That's all right. I don't want to have any suffering." So we should see if we want to be happy. I mean, it's really our choice. Do I want to be happy or do I not want to be happy? Then I see Krishna, as Prabhupada says in the purport to 1515, that God is all good and God is all merciful. This is the platform of peace. Bhotyam yagatapasam sarvalokmeshwar suridam sarvabhutanam gyatramam shantivichati. You see, Krishna's the controller. He's controlling everything. He's controlling my life. And he's my best friend. Your best friend is not going to do anything to hurt you. And Krishna's the best friend of the best friend of the best friend of the best friend. You take your best friend and you multiply that millions and millions and millions of times. You have a little idea of what is Krishna. It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, "Janaka janani daita tanai prabhu guru upati tubhu sarva." So, most of us, anyway, we have a mother who loves us, right? Some people maybe have bad mothers. Generally, your mother loves you, no matter what. She's your well-wisher. Father's your well-wisher. Your children, your beloved, Prabhu, Guru, Patitu, your master. These are normally well-wishers. And Krishna's all of them. Krishna's all of them. And, you know, for us, we're really like children who just can't understand. And we sometimes think, "Well, why doesn't Krishna explain to me?" But even if he explains, we may not understand. Just like, you know, we tried to explain to my little granddaughter for an hour, and she couldn't understand. All she could focus on is the medicine tastes better. She couldn't go beyond that. So Krishna tries to explain, but at a certain point he just does. He just says, "Okay, here you go." And harishyami, to take away, takes away. You know, he may take away our money, our possessions, our family, our prestige, whatever it is. Ultimately, he takes away our body. Everything that we're attached to, our intelligence, our, whatever our false shelters are. But he's not taking away like he's punishing a criminal. Like Prabhupada says, the cat carrying the kitten and the cat carrying the rat. It's a whole different thing. Krishna's not taking away from us like he's killing Kamsa. He's not angry with us. Now, once we've surrendered to Krishna, whatever he's taking away, whatever he's churning in our lives is out of love. I read once, and it was some Christian who said, you know, we go to God when our foundations are shaking, not realizing that he's the one shaking the foundation. You know, generally we go to God, please fix everything for me. Please give me a pleasant life here in the jail. But maybe that's not what's good for us. Just to stay in the jail in the present in a pleasant life. So the devotees are also like that. You know, sometimes also the great devotees, they may say something or do something that's a little painful. This is the business of the guru. To be a sadhu, to cut. But that's not what people want from a guru either. They want the guru just to say, oh, you will have my blessings to get wealth. Right? Health. There's a story where these men approached Srila Prabhupada on a train. Guru, we want your blessings. Oh, sadhuji, give us your blessings. And he said, you have my blessings. That your material life will be finished. That's not the blessings we want. And if the guru says to you, you're in maya, this is just your attachment, then we become very angry. How dare you say this is my attachment? You're supposed to tell me how wonderful I am and how advanced I am, how perfect I am. How dare you chastise me? I was speaking to one devotee who was saying, yes, my guru Maharaj, only maybe five of his disciples can he actually correct. Everyone else he has to just correct from the Vyasa-sana in a general way. But individually, only five people are willing to hear out of 2,000 disciples. I remember once saying this in a temple. I said, you know, it's very difficult for the teacher, the guru, to really speak the truth to someone. And the temple president said, everyone here in my temple perfectly hears the truth from their guru. That's very difficult. So when we hear the truth, we're all saying, I want the absolute truth. Yes, I want the absolute truth. So when we hear the truth, we should be grateful. Even if the truth isn't always pleasing to our false ego. How can the truth be pleasing to our false ego? That's a contradiction in terms. Our false ego is false. How can the truth be in harmony with something that's false? The truth will be, your false ego is false. Not your false ego is very nice. So for that, we should feel gratitude. We should feel gratitude for the physician's surgery, bitter medicine, stringent diet and exercise program, and for cutting apart what's false in us. Ravindra Surupu has a wonderful outline. He calls it japa on his blog. And he says, as our anarthas are being destroyed, at first we find it very painful because what's happening is the false ego is being dismantled and we think, that's me. That's why we're all afraid of death, you know. I mean, there's no such thing as death. It's just changing clothes. Why are we so afraid of death? Because death dismantles this particular identity. Everything we've built up. I'm this person's child, I'm this person's wife, husband, mother, father, friend, brother, sister. I have this education, I've done all of our memories. This is who I am. Our identity is our memories. And you lose your memory, like, well, who am I? And we're all afraid, who will I be? This whole little thing I built up will be dismantled. So when the false ego is being dismantled, we fight against it. No, this is who I am. And gradually it becomes ecstatic. Because we start to get who we really are. Chaita Dwarpan Marjan, we start to see our actual self. And our actual self is a lot nicer than our false identity. It's much more pleasing. So it turns from being miserable to being delightful. Just like a good cure. If you have a disease, in the beginning the cure may be painful. And after a while the cure becomes delightful because you become healthy. You have to go through the difficult process first. And how happy Guru and Krishna will be if we're grateful for the chastisements and for the difficulty. How happy they will be. How much we wanted little Tarini to say, "Thank you, Mommy and Daddy, for giving me this medicine," which she never did. But how happy we would be. So that's what Krishna would like to see from us. That when there is difficulty, we say, "Thank you, Lord." You offer more obeisances to the Lord. Not like, "Okay, I guess I still have to worship you now." I mean, we thank Krishna when he does the things that we like. Right? So to thank Krishna, "Thank you, dear Lord, for taking us away. Thank you, dear Lord, for smashing my false ego." And just doing that, daiva, just doing that, we get our rightful inheritance. So you can understand how difficult it must be to have that mood. Now what about the other way? When somebody apparently offends us or disrespects us. What these brothers did to Narada was quite disrespectful. I mean, just putting aside that he's Narada, that he's a sadhu, for anybody, it would be disrespectful, isn't it? I mean, of course, nowadays, people engaging in naked sexual activities on the street is considered almost normal. You know, we've almost come to an animal society, especially here. You know, I remember years ago taking a walk in Soho Square, and there was one girl who she cut her hair really, really short, and she dyed it yellow with brown spots like leopard. She looked like a leopard. I thought, yeah, they're really preparing for their next body. Trying to look, or they pierced. I've seen the one person on the street here had her cheeks pierced with silver fangs coming out of her cheeks. So they're already becoming animals in their human body, and as animals, then they can do whatever anywhere with anybody anyhow. We're not supposed to be offended by them, but it's offensive. It's definitely offensive. I mean, you see in a culture like India, even husband and wife don't hold hands at home. That's considered disrespectful. It's very disrespectful. You have some shame. And if people disrespect us, we generally become angry. We want to punish them. At least we yell at them. Or we complain about them to somebody else. We want something bad to happen to them. So therefore, Maharaj Pariksit was asking, why did Narada become angry? So if we really want to become ourselves free of the modes of material nature, and we really want to become such that Krishna will want to see us, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, then we also have to be representatives of Krishna, which means that we always think to do good to others. We always think of others' welfare. And this is not easy. It's very easy for people who are nice to us. It's not easy when people are not nice to us. To think about their welfare instead of my feelings and how I should be treated. I mean, of course, we say, you know, Trinadapi, we should be lower than the grass and more tolerant than the tree. Amani, amani, dena. We should not care about our own respect. I might have talked about this before here. How do you get to the point that you don't care whether or not people disrespect you? It's interesting with Jed Bharat when Maharaj Mahugana was insulting him. And if you read the insults, it didn't seem to me that it was that huge of an insult. Of course, it's kind of hard to tell what the king's tone of voice was. You know, "Who are you? What are you? You know, you're just some skinny guy. I can understand why you're not carrying the palanquin, man." And it says at the end of the section that Jed Bharat felt some disturbance in his mind from being insulted like that. Which is really interesting because Maharaj Mahugana was the first person he spoke to in that whole life. when he had taken birth in the family of a Brahmin after becoming a deer, he had decided, I'm not going to get attached to anybody in this world. Nobody, not even my family members. And he didn't even talk to his parents. And he intentionally did everything backwards. He'd wash his hands before passing school. You know, he couldn't learn the Gayatri Mantra. And his father kept trying to teach him. But he was just not. I'm going to act like I'm a foolish person. And then his stepbrothers were so rude to him. They made him act as a scarecrow out in the field. You know, if you guys think sometimes you get a hard job here in the temple. And they would only feed him worm-eaten food. And he never complained. Never. That whatever I get, I get. Whatever food I get, I get. Whatever job I'm asked to do, I'll just do. And then he was captured by dacoits because he's standing out in the field guarding the crops like a scarecrow. And these dacoits thought that he was like an animal. And they thought, well, the Vedas say you should sacrifice an animal to Kali, we'll do better and sacrifice a human, which is not in the Vedas. So they took him to, and he was also undisturbed. They were going to kill him in front of Goddess Kali. And he thought, Mari Krishna, Rakhe K, Rakhe Krishna, Mari K, you know, it's all right, whatever Krishna wants. He wasn't disturbed. But somehow or other, when this king insulted him, he became disturbed. But it said he tolerated that disturbance. And instead, he tried to do good to the king. He spoke words of instruction to the king for the king's benefit. He broke his own vow of silence. He broke his own determination that I'm not going to deal with anyone in the world just to benefit this person. But we can see that there was some disturbance in his mind. So some disturbance will come, as Prabhupada says in Purport to 1422. As long as we have a material body, it will be affected by the modes of nature. And Prabhupada's quoting 1426, how one overcomes the modes of nature. It's not that, however advanced we become, that there's never going to be any disturbance for our body and mind. That's not how it works. It's not that if I become a very advanced devotee, that my body and mind will not be affected by the modes of nature. Prabhupada said it will. He said, as long as you have a material body, it will be affected by the modes of nature. He said, but one must remain neutral. How does one remain neutral? That's given here. Sagunan samatitya tam brahma bhuyai kalpate. Namcha yovya vicharina bhakti yogina sevate. To always be engaged in bhakti no matter what. The mode of ignorance may be around you, engage in bhakti. Mode of goodness may be around you, engage in bhakti. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear. Not always thinking, I always want to be in a position of illumination. That will not happen in this world. Sometimes all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge. Sometimes the body is attacked by delusion. And you think, this is not me. I'm not this body. And how do you do that? By engaging in devotional service. It's not just a mental adjustment. Why does engaging in devotional service do that? Because then you're completely full. Ramabhuta prasanatma. Nisajatina kanchati. The reason then you don't hanker or lament, the reason you don't hanker for respect in this world, and the reason that you no longer want to hurt people and disrespect you, is that prasanatma, you're full of joy. What is that joy? That joy is your relationship with Krishna. That's the joy. It's not just some impersonal, you know, om joy. Oh, I'm listening. But I have my relationship with Krishna. When I have my relationship with Krishna, guess what? I have everything I need. Om purnamida purnamidam. He's complete. I have. Why don't I care about respect in this world? Because I already have respect. That's why the devotees don't care. Everybody didn't care whether Nalakugara Mani even respected him. Why should he care about that? Krishna respects him. He goes to Krishna's palaces. Krishna's washing his feet. If God's washing your feet, why should you care about these two minor demigods? Okay? If you eat with the Queen of England, then why should you care if some drunk on the street insults you? You're friends with the Queen of England. As Prabhupada says, if you have £1,000,000, why do you care for £1? Doesn't matter. In billions and billions and billions of pounds, these people who are billions of pounds, they'll buy a $10,000 necklace for their wife. £10,000 means nothing if you have billions of pounds, right? It doesn't mean anything. have it, you gain it, you lose it, it doesn't matter. So the respect of people in this world is inconsequential to one whom Krishna is respecting. And Prabhupada says in the story of Akura, one who's not trying to be recognized by Krishna's life is condemned. We should be aspiring for that. Like Akura was saying, he will call me Uncle Akura, and then my whole life will be successful. So we're hankering for that. Then will Krishna call me? Then will Krishna call me and say, well done, my good and faithful servant. My dear friend, my dear uncle, my dear beloved, whatever it may be. We're aspiring for that. And so therefore, by engaging in our devotional service and having our relationship with Krishna, we can become above the modes of nature. When the mode of ignorance attacks the body and mind and says, that person offended you, get them. So, it's not interesting. Someone's taken my the three-day-old bread. Why do I care? I've got a feast plate waiting in my room. So one doesn't become detached by being hard-hearted or by being cold or by cutting off one's feelings or even cutting off one's desires, but by reposing all of those desires in devotional service. That is the only way to become free from this tendency to want to hurt others who disrespect us. Because we have to be situated in Krishna. Otherwise, you can repress it, repress it, repress it, and someday somebody will offend you badly enough that you'll lash out. You know, you'll tolerate, 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 and then one day you just won't be able to tolerate anymore. And that's coming from fallible soldiers, from looking for in this world, in Krishna's external energy, what we should be looking for in Krishna. So here's our two lessons here. What to do when we're the Manu Kuvera and Mani Griha, and Narada's cursed us. And what to do when we're Narada and Manu Kuvera and Mani Griha have offended us. So we have a few minutes for questions. How to be good patients and how to be good doctors. Questions, comments, corrections, suggestions, additions. Yes.
You mentioned previously about one should not always think one should be in illumination, which sometimes I feel like the same thing is very special.
There's two things. There's the modes of nature and there's transcendence. So therefore Krishna says one who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear nor long for them when they disappear. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear nor long for them when they disappear.
Which verse is that?
It's your 14th chapter. Because Arjuna's asking, you know, what does it mean to be above the modes of material nature? The symptoms. Maybe 14:22. You have a Bible with you? So that's the illumination of the mode of goodness. But one of the symptoms of the mode of goodness is all the gates in the body are illumined by knowledge. One sees everything in the proper perspective. That will come and go. Nishta means that you're firmly situated in goodness. Until you're at the platform of Nishta, by definition, we're buffeted by the modes of material nature. It's like you're in an ocean and you're being hit by the different modes of material nature. So until we're steady in devotional service, we tend to identify with the body and mind. We tend to identify with the modes. When our body and mind is in goodness, we think, oh, I'm very Krishna conscious. When my body and mind is in ignorance, then I think, oh, everything's finished. When my body and mind are in passion, then I think, oh, let me work hard and I hope people notice how hard I'm working. Hope people will notice how advanced I am. What am I going to get out of this? How are people treating me? So until we're at Nista, we're affected by these things. At least on the intellectual platform, we can understand this is not me, it's not real, it comes and goes, I shouldn't be attached to it coming and going. It's just going to come and go. It's like the weather. Sometimes it's sunny and nice. Like right now it's sunny and nice. Thank you, Mother. And sometimes it's not nice. But it's not me. It's cloudy and rainy, or it's sunny and pleasant. There's certain services I can do when it's sunny and pleasant, certain services I can do when it's cloudy and rainy. Of course, Maharaj here, he doesn't care about the cloudy and rainy. I'll never forget our Hari Nam out in the rain. He said, let's just go in the shops. So if it's pouring rain of the mode of ignorance and you can't do your Hari Nam on the street, you go in the shops. I couldn't believe it. We're going in the shops. So when there's delusion, okay, what service can I do in delusion? Mostly we try to sleep when we're affected by the mode of ignorance. Generally, Prabhupada says that. Person in the mode of ignorance, if he's affected by ignorance, he wants to go to sleep. Be careful. When ignorance is affecting your body and mind, be careful. What do you say? What do you do? It'll pass. But there is something that we should be attached to, but that's being in transcendence. That's a different thing. When you're in transcendence, the storms and the sunshine are still going on there, but you're not identifying with them. And if you want to be in transcendence all the time, guess what part of the process you got to go through? How do you get to nishta? What do you got to go through? Anartha nivritti. There you go. If you don't like anistha sadhana bhakti, and anistha sadhana bhakti is not a nice place to be. It really is not a nice place to be. Bhagavatam says two people are happy. Who are the two people that are happy? The fools and the
crazy.
The crazy fools and the transcendentalists. And everyone in between is suffering. So generally, what do people do to relieve their suffering? They drink, like here these demigods. They drink, they smoke. Nowadays people have a lot of not only chemical intoxication, but electrical intoxication. We're constantly watching movies. I mean, you know, these people, they can't even wait in an airport without having some movie there. They can't have an hour without something to distract them. So we come to Krishna consciousness and we get rid of all that. We say, okay, I'm not going to have anything that distracts me from the fact that I'm suffering. I'm going to have it right here. So if you're not yet transcendental, if you're no longer a fool, if you're no longer a fool, you're not intoxicated, and you're not transcendental, life's tough. It's really tough. Not a good place to stay. You want to get through anistha sadhana bhakti as quickly as possible and come to the platform of nistha. That means you've got to go through anartha nivritti. Prabhupada says going through anartha nivritti is a hard struggle with determination. And it's our fault that we're where we are. It's not Krishna's fault. If you've committed a crime, you have to go through rehabilitation, and it hurts. If you become an alcoholic or a heroin addict, you have to go through a treatment program, and in the beginning, it hurts. You know, if you take thorns and stick them in your body, somebody taking out the thorns is going to hurt. You got to be willing to go through that. Dismantling the false ego at first is going to hurt because we're attached to it. So if you want to always be steady in Krishna consciousness, if we want those moments of ecstasy and those moments of brilliance and those moments of truth to become constant, then we've got to be willing to go through the treatment. And the treatment is not just the externals of putting your body in the temple room for Mangal Arati and moving your fingers over the beads while your lips move. It's not, as Burjapuru writes in his Japa book, it's not a series of activities. It's being willing to face the truth about me. So that's the cure. But as far as the modes, they're going to go up and down. That's not going to stop. No matter how Krishna conscious you are, the modes are going to go up and down. It's just you're no longer going to identify with them. It's like, okay, for maybe for some of us, but for most of us, the stock market's been going up and down. Does it matter to you? Do you care? Anybody here heavily invested in the stocks? If you're not invested in the stock market, why would you care? Does it matter? It's a minor disturbance. Isn't it? Doesn't matter. Other people are jumping out of windows, and for us it's a minor disturbance. Is that right? Yes.
How did you know I was doing this?
Because that's why your hand raised before.
In the instructions of Vishwadeva to Yudhisthira, Yudhisthira asked, what is the position of a person who's being constantly harassed by someone unnecessarily? And what should one do? What's one's position? So he replied, Vishwadeva replied that the person who is being harassed, if he does not react, he will receive all the good qualities of the person who's chastising him. And the person who's chastising will receive all the bad qualities that you have when you're being chastised. So I find that
very
interesting, because it gives us some impetus to make spiritual advancement, even though one may think there's no cause for acquiring advancement in that particular position.
Thank you. He said that when Maharaj Yudhisthira asked Bhishmadeva, what should you do if someone's harassing you? And Bhishmadeva replied, if you don't respond, I assume respond negatively, then you get all the good qualities of the person who's chastising you, and the person who's chastising gets all the bad qualities of the person that they're chastising. And knowing this can give us an impetus to behave properly, even when we don't see any purpose in what's happening. I would also say that, you know, do be practical. If somebody is treating you cruelly and you have the ability to get out of the circumstances, you can get out of the circumstances. You don't have to stand there and let somebody beat you.
Yeah, I think he mentioned that too.
Yeah.
If there was no way out.
If there's no way out. I mean, like Prahlad Maharaj, I've given this example many times. Where is he going to go? His father ran the whole universe. Where do you go? You know, if your father's the chief of police, you can't go to the police and complain. You're stuck. Or Haridas Thakur, you know, he's being beaten by the government. You can't complain to the government when it's the government who's beating you. You're stuck. It's interesting that Maharaj Ambarish didn't retaliate against Durvasa, because he was the king. I mean, he could have retaliated. And I'm sure that Maharaj Ambarish, if he were attacked like that on the battlefield by another Kshatriya, would have fought back. But he was being attacked by a Brahmana, who was his guest, and who felt that he offended him. So he had the mood as the king, as a Kshatriya, I'm not supposed to retaliate against a Brahmana who's my guest. So not against a guest and not against a Brahmana. So he just stood there. He just stood there with his hands folded when Durvasa created this demon to attack him. Narada hung around to hear Daksha's insults. And it said that he did that because he thought, well, let him just express his anger. And after he expresses his anger, he'll calm down, and then I'll be able to preach to him, which didn't happen. But that was Prabhupada explains how he was calculating. He thought, let him just get it out of his system. It's not that we're required to hang around and let people disrespect us and mistreat us. It's not that we need to do that. But there may be circumstances where it's unavoidable. I mean, sometimes it's unavoidable. And then what do? Mari Krishna Rakeke, Rake Krishna Marike. Ultimately, Krishna's doing this. He has some lesson for me. There's something he wants me to learn. Instead of just thinking, this demon, this terrible person, let me attack them, let me discredit them, let me write something nasty about them on the internet, or whatever. Let me hate them. I mean, what lesson does Krishna want me to learn? Yes.
The verse you mentioned, which is saying that we shouldn't be attached to being in illumination or not in illumination. So therefore, expresses a recommendation for the sadhaka who is not yet finished.
It's Krishna giving the symptom of somebody who's above the modes of material nature. That's the symptom. So if we are attached to illumination and we hate delusion, we can understand that I'm not above the modes of material nature. In other words, if that's our feeling, we should not think, oh, that means that I'm a very great devotee. And no, it's a symptom of being attached to the modes of nature.
I'm struggling a little bit with the meaning of illumination and illusion in this context.
Okay, well, let's think about it this way. So, in Krishna book, pretty sure it's in the chapter about Vitrasura, there's a whole explanation about how the devotee should be detached from the three modes of material nature. And then after, at the end of that, it says the devotees, though, are generally in goodness. And Prabhupada says, you may ask, if the devotees are detached from the modes, why are they generally in goodness? It says, from goodness, one can become Krishna conscious. So, for example, one aspect of illumination is physical cleanliness, having your room clean, your body clean, your surroundings clean. And Prabhupada would chastise devotees who saw filth in the temple and didn't clean it up, for example. You can't say, well, I'm not attached to illumination, so I'm just going to let there be, you know, filth all over Krishna's temple. That's part of my devotional service. But let's say that Krishna puts you in a circumstance that's filthy. Has that ever happened to you? It's happened to me. I've had sometimes to say, really, really. I once had to stay overnight in this home. And people never clean the bathroom. Sometimes you find there's certain kind of people who think it's beneath them to clean their bathrooms. I don't want to go too far with that. They just think I'm too high class to clean the bathroom. And the bathroom smelled so bad that I didn't feel like I could bathe in the bathroom and be clean. I felt like just walking into the bathroom, I was becoming so contaminated. I said, how am I going to take care of my deities? But that's where I was put for the night, and I was supposed to do a program there the next day. There were cockroaches walking on the altar. The altar was covered with dust, and there were cockroaches, but that's where I was. And what was I going to say? Excuse me, you're all filthy bums? What was I going to do? Stop. Okay, this is where Krishna's put me. Thank God it was only one night. You know? Okay, this is where he's put me. It was hard. I'm very attached to clean environments. And I just say, I'm attached to clean environments because I want to enjoy. Frankly, it's an attachment to Swarga.
Which country was it?
So if it happens, then, you know, you go on with your service. I still had to take care of my deities. I still had to bathe. I didn't think it did me any good. Still have to do the preaching program.
Sometimes it's a little bit clearer. So it's not that delusion means that one is forgetting Krishna, but rather delusion in the sense of...
The body and mind is... Just the body and mind will sometimes be... Sometimes your mind will feel happy. Sometimes your mind will feel sad. When your mind's feeling sad, it's like having to stay in that house. Sometimes your body's tired. Doesn't your body ever get tired? And then your mind can't work? Doesn't that happen to you? That's delusion. Else they can't think anymore. We don't hate it. Ah, I hate it. Oh. Okay, now I get to spend some hours in a filthy house. Oh, well. Hare Krishna. I'm going to go on serving Krishna anyway. What service can I do for Krishna now? Maybe the only service I can do is go to sleep. That will happen. That's a very nice purport, 1422. Prabhupada talks about, as long as one has a body, the body's going to be affected. I don't think it's me. Sometimes the mind will feel sad. Sometimes the mind will feel happy. It's not me. Sometimes the body's full of energy and vitality and enthusiasm. Sometimes the body's tired or sick. Right? not me. It's not that I want to be attached to having a body and mind full of vitality and energy, and because it's not going to happen all the time. I want to be attached to always serving Krishna and not forgetting Krishna even when my body and mind is finished. I want to remember Krishna, you know, when I'm in Hawaii, and I want to remember Krishna when I'm in that really awful bathroom. Or, you know, we went to go preach in the deaf schools in the indoor, and we took the train. The bathrooms on the Indian train. Wow. Just walking past the bathrooms. Indian train. You can't hate it. You want to hate it. I mean, I wanted to go in there with a big bottle of Lysol. You want to hate it, but you can't hate it. Does that make sense? So, sorry, but sometimes my mind is like a bathroom on an Indian train. Maybe that only happens to me. Sometimes my body and mind are like a bathroom on an Indian train. And sometimes my body and mind are like a waterfall in Hawaii.
Probably also when he went to the Bowery, he was disgusted.
Right.
It just gave him more incentive to preach.
Prabhupada, yeah. Prabhupada on the Bowery is a good example. Is that all right? Does that help? Okay, we should stop now. I want to be invited back to Soho in the future. So thank you for inviting me on my brief hello goodbye trip to London this time. Hare Krishna, always to Prabhupada.